the one thing that brings life close to perfection is love. Welcome to my dojo. This is Kung Fu Pizza Party, and I'm your host, Brandon Knight. And today, I am here to review Chocolate, starring Yanin Jija, because if there's anything that people want on Valentine's Day, or the day after when it goes on like 90% off at Walgreens, is chocolate. Here on Kung Fu Pizza Party, I seek to deliver high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and serve up some wisdom one slice at a time. And I remember back in, I think this came out in 2006, 6, 7, 8, somewhere around there. It may have been actually 2008. Back in 2008 when this movie initially came out, that there was a lot of buzz surrounding chocolate. Black Belt Magazine, it was all over the place. I remember seeing ads and interviews in Black Belt Magazine for it. And every once in a while, still to this day, I catch reels of people just saying like, man, why do we sleep on this movie? This movie is so good. So here is my turn to echo what everyone else is saying. Man, why are we sleeping on this movie? This is a very good film, and I hope by the end of this episode you will be inspired to go check out Chocolate for yourself. So once again, this movie stars Yanin Jija in her film debut. I apologize if I am mispronouncing her name. This is her first film, playing a character named Zen. So here is the elevator pitch for the film. It has a little bit of a Romeo and Juliet forbidden love kind of thing. So again, great movie to be watching this week as we are looking forward towards Valentine's Day. A Japanese Yakuza, so a Japanese gang, he's actually a crime boss, falls in love with the girlfriend of a Thai crime boss. The crime boss name is Number 8. That is what he is referred to here in the film. So the Yakuza falls in love with the girlfriend of a Thai crime boss. The girlfriend is also muscle for him as well. So they fall in love, have this secret forbidden romance off to the side until eventually Number 8 discovers that this secret romance has been going on and basically says, okay, either this stops or I'm going to kill both of you. So she breaks it off and they go their separate ways. She moves away from where they are at, only to quickly discover not long after moving away that she is pregnant with the Yakuza's daughter. So time goes on, the daughter grows up, and early on in the film, there was an aspect of this like opening sequence where you're being introduced to the Yakuza and the secret lover, Thai girl, that I was like, man, this movie is really dating itself because they are like constantly smoking in this like opening 5-minute sequence. I'm like, man, she is like always smoking. Turns out that was foreshadowing because by the time her daughter is like a teenager, the mom is diagnosed with cancer, presumably lung cancer. I don't think they ever like necessarily clarify what form of cancer, but she is very sick and they are quite poor. And so they are having a hard time affording the mom's medication and treatments. The daughter and her friend, and again, they're both like teenagers, at one point stumble upon a notebook. And in this notebook, it has written down names and money value that these people owe. So they presume that for some reason, a bunch of these business owners in the tri-state area, that's not how things work in Thailand, but that these business owners in the nearby vicinity all owe the mom money. When in reality, they don't know that their mom was like the muscle for a crime boss at one point in time. So this is all names of people who still owe the Thai crime boss number 8, money. They don't know that. They just are like, oh, we need to get money for mom's treatment. Here's a list of names of people who owe her money. Let's go get the money. So they start shaking down these crime bosses. Obviously, the daughter knows martial arts and is able to shake down these guys and get the money. Eventually, this gets around to the Thai crime boss number 8, who is like, I am just so tired of this woman coming back up. So he contrives a plan that's going to get the mom, the daughter, the friend, and the dad, who's been absent for most of the movie to protect everybody, together to then kill everybody. And if that was it for the movie, if that was the whole premise of the film, honestly, the movie then would just be fine. If it was truly just that, the movie is fine. I don't think it's anything remarkable that you would need to go out of your way to check out. But there's a very key element in this film that makes it, that gives it so much heart, so much depth, and makes it such a unique feature in the kung fu, or in this case, Thai action movie genre. Because one thing that I left out is the fact that the daughter of the Thai girlfriend and the Yakuza, she has autism. She is autistic. And so that adds such a unique element within this film. I don't know if I have ever seen a action film in general, but particularly something in like the martial art media genre that depicts somebody with autism who is neurodiverse. I will say, again, this movie came out, I think it was like 2008. So I'm not going to sit here and pretend that it is a perfect representation of autism, and that I'm sure there are elements of it that are dated now by today's understanding of autism. There's some things that are said. The dad is a good guy. I don't want you to like think that like the dad is like this really, I mean, he's a Yakuza, so like technically he's a bad guy, but like the character himself is a good person, but there's kind of this whole thing about like how he loves finding imperfections, and like that's supposed to allude to a little bit like his daughter, and that's not, I think all of that doesn't really hold up very well with how we understand autism now. Unless you're JFK, or excuse me, unless you're RFK, then I guess maybe it's accurate. I don't know. Don't listen to anything that man has to say about health ever. But Zen has autism. And so this immediately adds like a certain level of depth and heart that you wouldn't necessarily anticipate initially with this, with like a just kind of run-of-the-mill Thai action movie. She has sensory issues. She very early on, like in a sequence from her childhood, she accidentally swallows a fly, and after that point she has like this sensory issue when it comes to flies. The buzzing sound, the movement, it causes her to panic. She does not quite understand what is going on with her mom, but at one point she accidentally pulls a wig off of her mom's head, which there's like shots of her playing with her mom's hair, and now it's like fallen off the top of her head, and so she has kind of this like panic attack after this takes place. And so just kind of seeing the film a little bit through the lens and the perspective of somebody with autism who is going through a very traumatic event of their mother dying, their only support system. It's her and her friend. It's her friend and her mom. That is it. She doesn't know her dad until like the very end of the movie is when she first meets her dad. And so she's going through this very traumatic event of her mom dying and not quite understanding what's going on or why they don't have money to pay for the treatment and the whole bit. And her friend, this sweet kid, is like doing the best he can to kind of like help her understand. There's also kind of this like, they kind of, her and her friend kind of do like this street performance thing where Zen sits in a chair and around a crowd of people, they throw balls at her, and she has these really great reflexes because she's so sensitive to sensory things that she can like catch the ball no matter what direction it's coming from, how hard or how fast it's being thrown. And it like, they use it to make money. That's kind of how they like get a little bit of money outside of the mom working before she gets sick. So her being autistic adds such a depth and heart to her character and to the movie itself. I found it's overall like a pretty easygoing watch. 90 minutes. The action isn't too violent. The language wasn't very bad. I think there was very slim nudity like right in the beginning. But I did find that like there were parts where I was like almost moved to tears just watching her like trying to understand what's going on and just seeing the world through her perspective, and it just being kind of a tragic story through and through. Not that having autism is tragic, but just like all the surrounding events around her are traumatic. But the autism aspect adds an interesting layer towards the martial arts part, and this continues to elevate the movie because it kind of then turns the movie a little bit into an ode to the martial art movie genre and to Muay Thai, because this is a Thai film. So with her, the way that her brain works, she is able to watch and mimic people. And it just so happens that where they are living, there is a Thai boxing school, a Muay Thai school, right next door to their house. And so at some point during her childhood, she started watching the guys train. Never took a class any day of her life whatsoever, but she started watching the guys train and then started mimicking it, and pretty quickly developed amazing form, and these heightened her reflexes even more, and just like did the training on her own from being able to watch the guys train. And it goes a step further, and this is where like the ode to the martial art movie genre kind of comes into play. Her and her friend are super into martial art movies. There are two scenes in particular where they are watching Ung Bak, and then another scene where they're watching The Protector. Like you see it on the screen, and I can't remember. I forgot to look it up, but the director of Chocolate also directed Ung Bak. I can't remember if he also directed The Protector or not, but he at least did Ung Bak. So here they are watching this Tony Jaa. So it's a big Easter egg as well. And sure enough, during the fight sequences later on, there are moments where she is doing techniques, and the scenes are being shot very reminiscently of fight scenes from Ung Bak and The Protector. She's doing the Tony Jaa knee double fist strike, the flying knee over the top elbow jackknife move. Like you can see these moments of like, oh, she's doing Tony Jaa. But there's other references as well. Apparently, some of this had to get edited out for international release because copyright laws, I guess, work differently in different places. But she also watches Bruce Lee and Jackie Chan films in the original cut of this movie as well. And you can see the influence then as she's mimicking them in other parts of the film. There is, at different points, she's bouncing chocolate. Roll credit. She's bouncing little chocolates off her arm and catching them and eating them. That was a thing Jackie Chan did in a lot of his 90s, early 90s films. He would bounce like gum. I think it was gum off his arm and catch it and like eat it kind of thing. There is early on a whole fight scene that is an ode to Bruce Lee. The arguably the most iconic fight scene in The Big Boss is the ice factory fight scene where he, you know, they're in the, I reviewed The Big Boss not long after the show got started, and it's, you know, he's fighting these different guys using the ice blocks, hitting everybody. So if I understand correctly, one of the first guys that they go to shake down to get money from runs an ice factory. And if I understand correctly, how the scene was originally shot was it was supposed to show clips back to back of Bruce Lee fighting in The Big Boss and then mimicking it perfectly in the actual chocolate film. That had to get edited, but one thing that did not get edited out is the fact that throughout this scene, she is doing a Bruce Lee hoo-ah impersonation all throughout. So you still know, oh, she's doing Bruce Lee right now. She's mimicking Bruce Lee throughout this sequence. And it's so cool. Going back to Jackie Chan for a second, the final fight between her and the Thai crime boss, number 8, is a whole Jackie Chan 90s stunt sequence. They jump from one building to the next. By the way, read that she did all of her own stunts in this movie. She jumps from one building to the next, and then they're fighting kind of like down the side of the building, like jumping from different sides, hopping over little gates, swinging off of signs. And it's like, I'm watching a Jackie Chan movie right now. Like, it was so well done. The credits isn't necessarily the Jackie Chan blooper reel that we used to get where it's like him kind of acting silly when they mess up a fight or whatever, but it was the parts of the Jackie Chan credits where you get to see them botch a bunch of stunts, and that's what the entire the bulk of the credits for Chocolate was watching them get hurt on the job trying to do some of these stunts and some of the, like, sometimes you get like these major injuries. I'm talking like I've been in a movie and gotten hurt before, but sometimes I have gotten hurt at work, and it's so funny how sometimes you get hurt not doing the super crazy stunt, but like the thing that should just be really easy. There's one of the stunt guys gets hit. There's like a scene where she opens a locker to hit one of the guys, and he was like a fraction of an inch the wrong direction, and it like cut open his head. It cut open the front of his head. I had that back in December. I was running up the warped wall at work, and something in my foot popped, and it turned, my foot turned purple for like a week. It's off, you know. Trust me, watch some of Jackie Chan's older films, and you'll see also the bigger stunts not go great either. But sometimes it is just like the small, like you were a hair the wrong direction, and now you got, you know, stitches coming your way. But yeah, it's just, you even get like her ability to mimic people shows up earlier in the film, or earlier than this big stunt sequence against number 8, where as it always is with these kinds of films, you have to always fight somebody who's like super good, a super awesome fighter before you can fight the final big boss, right? That's always part of this genre. And so she has to end up fighting this guy who does capoeira. So he's got all the cool flips and tricky kicks and the whole bit. It's a really cool fight scene, but let's just crank it up a notch because he's not just a guy who does capoeira. He has Tourette's. So his movements, along with being like super flowy and what you would normally expect when you watch someone do capoeira, there's kind of this like unpredictability to it because of his Tourette's kind of makes him like shake and do erratic movements a little bit. And it costs her initially early on in the fight. He like starts winning early on until she starts mimicking him and she starts doing like her own twitches. It kind of reminded me a little bit of in, I think it's Fearless Hyena when Jackie Chan does emotional kung fu. Fact check me on that. I think that's where the emotional kung fu shows up, where you're just like trying to like throw people off with your like facial expression or whatever. Like that kind of reminded me of that a little bit. It's just such a unique and not in a like hip kind of way, but it's just such a well-made movie that, like I said, when you if you take all the autism aspect out of it, it's just fine. It's a fine movie, but adding this layer just makes the movie so good and gives it so much heart and just makes it such a unique chapter in the very large book that is martial art media and fight action movies. That's like, holy cow, this is just so good. And like I said, I'm not going to pretend that the movie came out in 2008. So I'm not going to pretend that it's like perfect representation of autism or Tourette's. But for 2008, I think it's pretty good. Like by way of 2008 depiction of this, I think it holds up for the most part. I loved this movie. It was very, very good. Do not sleep on chocolate. I watched it. Don't sleep on chocolate. It will melt and then it will ruin your bed and stain your clothing. But also don't sleep on the movie chocolate. It is so good. I watched it for free on Roku. I also saw that it's available on Tubi as well. The version that I watched on Roku is in Thai, so be ready for subtitles. I find myself that when I'm watching something with subtitles, I have to be just like a little bit more attentive. There is a little bit of English in the movie, but by and large, it is Thai or Japanese that is spoken in the film. I definitely would watch Chocolate again. I definitely would purchase a copy for my own movie collection. It was maybe, I'm trying to think back now. I would say it's probably the best movie I've watched so far this year that I've covered here on the show. It is quite good. But that's all I do have to say about it. So again, check out Chocolate. It's easy to find. Chocolate's easy to find. It's available at any store. But it's also, the movie is also really easy to stream for free. And I should probably wrap up this episode before I make more chocolate related puns. So thanks for listening to today's episode. If you haven't yet already, please rate and review this show wherever you get your podcasts. Pass this episode along to a friend and enjoy your week. Enjoy your Valentine's Day. I hope you've got fun things planned. And if you don't, then I hope you buy plenty of chocolate at the Walgreens the day after. And you can follow the show on Instagram at Kung Fu Pizza Party and on Letterboxd, Kung Fu Pizza, PRTY, where you can get a review of the movie before the episode comes out. Check out my YouTube channel, Studio 219, a place for faith and pop culture. And check out the other great shows here on the In Is Out Ministries podcast network, including we have a whole bunch of new shows. I should keep plugging the new ones. So we have Your Matter Matters. A show about faith and science. Page and Pixel, a show where one week Page explains a book to Pixel, and the next week Pixel explains a video game to Page. And Theology on the Rocks, a show where the hosts sit down to have a couple cocktails and talk all things theology, because alcohol makes theology better. I don't know if that's their slogan, but it should be. You can have that one for free. If you listen to this show, you can have Alcohol Makes Theology Better for free. You can have that one for free. And you can check out my show, My Seminary Life, my sister show, My Seminary Life, where I talk faith, theology, and church ministry. So that's it for me for this episode. Thanks for hanging out with me. and for this one. This has been Kung Fu Pizza Party, where I have definitely delivered high-flying action in 30 minutes or less, making a rebound from last Friday's episode, where I went over, rebounding a little bit here, and serving up wisdom one slice